on to our next case, United States versus Puckett. Mr. Flynn.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I represented Devon Puckett in the underlying trial in district court and represent him here on appeal. And in order to understand why I ask for what could be considered a bold request to send back all three counts for a new jury trial based on the judge's instructions, I think it's important to take the instructions as a whole to understand the effect they had on the jury. At the end of the trial, the judge gave this instruction to the jury. All right, you may consider that. Let me also tell you and instruct you that you've heard through this deputy who just testified, and as to the certified copy of the conviction, questions about a prior conviction of the defendant. You should consider this evidence only as it relates to this case for the purpose of intent or knowledge. It may not be considered as evidence of anything else, and you may only consider it for the purpose of knowledge or intent is related to a charge here against the defendant. Later, that was given at the time that the judgment of conviction was entered. At the close of the trial, the government argues that the same thing was given and firming it up that it applied only to count three, which was the cocaine charge. However, the judge did not say conviction at that point. The exact words of the judge were, "You have heard evidence of acts of the defendant, other than those charged in the indictment. You may consider this evidence only on the question of defendant's knowledge and intent as to count three."
Is that part of the pattern in criminal jury instructions of the Seventh Circuit?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's taken verbatim from that?
That's correct.
And your beef is that it says acts and not conviction?
Well, it's important because on the basis
I understand, but you're...
Yes, that is, I think, an important consideration as to why I'm asking to have the bank robbery.
But acts do go in and can be entered, even without the conviction.
Well, Your Honor, no, and I think the jury instructions as given as a whole to the jury confused the jury as to what they consider. Remember, this is a deadlocked jury after a couple of days of deliberation.
No, I know that.
Okay. And my point is, they told the judge, we can't reach a verdict. Uh-huh. We're deadlocked. He instructed them to go back and look at the instructions taken as a whole. So we have the limiting instruction. The government is relying on this to say that the conviction clearly was only, they should have known, and they cite all the law that says we presume that juries take the instructions carefully. Well, if you presume that, what they were told is you can consider the conviction as to a count, and didn't say which count, but acts only as to count three. There were a multiplicity of bad acts in this case. And my client obviously is no saint. I mean, there are many other bad acts.
Well, that's kind of a modest way of putting it.
My client had prior convictions, Your Honor, and that's the bottom line here. We take, in analyzing our strategy, how to go to trial, very seriously, consideration whether to put them on or not. And if they have prior convictions, very few criminal defense lawyers, I think, anymore will put the defendant on, especially with Mr. Puckett's record on the facts of this case. But the problem is, I can state this in 16 years' experience, maybe going on 17 now, seldom been able to argue on the bank robbery count that I have more facts that favor exculpating my client, and the jury had major problems with it. That's in the record. Then the government does. They have a paucity of facts they can point to that exculpate him. We have a gun that, therefore, all the forensic evidence in this case goes towards exonerating my client. The
but
gun
your problem him. Is that when you try to argue that he had just had this cocaine for his personal use, that made his prior conviction for dealing the stuff admissible. And then that could lap over in the jury's mind to the bank robbery, but that's your problem because you tried to argue personal possession.
Well, again, Your Honor,
did you try the case, by the way?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Did you try the case?
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
And you kept him out how long?
2 days. And actually,
I'll give you a little, but go ahead.
Very late on a Friday afternoon, they came back after saying they were hopelessly deadlocked. The bank robbery charge is affected, Your Honor, and I think
it is, but it may well be. But it is because you decided to try to get out of the cocaine charge on a personal possession ground, and that immediately made his prior conviction relevant.
But the problem with that analysis, Your Honor, if you take the totality of the circumstances, the judge also denied my request for a lesser included possession. And I think when you take that denial in conjunction with granting the government, I mean, if it's sauce for the goose, it's sauce for the gander. Their only evidence there as to deliver is the quantity. And it's very different from the previous conviction, which were dime bags of crack cocaine.
Well, that's a separate. But don't you have to choose whether you're going to argue against the admission of the conviction or you're going to argue for personal possession? If you argue for personal possession, then the prior conviction comes in. If you argue successfully against admission of the prior conviction, then you're not going to get the personal possession.
Well, you're
on offense, right?
But in essence, then, we are entitled, I think, to the lesser included, and we have to make...
If you are, then you're going to be faced with that prior conviction. No way around it.
Well, except that it is different in the court...
No, it isn't. I don't think so.
Well, I do think it is different, Your Honor, and I think that is a major consideration, but the reason it's different is, one, our individual dime bags of crack cocaine. If the court would permit me just to bring in a few of the facts to explain why I think...
No, we understand, but the fact is he's a dealer, and the prior conviction shows he's a dealer, and therefore, if he's going to argue that he just bought this huge quantity for his own personal consumption, that prior conviction is relevant.
Well, Your Honor, he was a dealer 7 years ago, and he was a dealer in dime bags of crack cocaine, which the courts are very familiar with, street vendors selling small quantities. We relied on the Fifth Circuit case in showing that our cross-examination could get it's very different than if it's one solid bag of powder. There was no scales found.
Well, you can point that out to the jury.
Well, and we tried to, Your Honor, but I think we were limited by the court's refusal to give us a lesser-included instruction. I think all the case law says it has to be done on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
That the facts of the specific...
And the court relied on the quantity.
He relied on the quantity. Now, in response to that, they put on an expert to say that in his experience in Rockford, Illinois, the most he ever saw for personal use was 3.5 grams. And my...
You got 60-some-odd?
60.2 grams.
That's a pretty good jolt. It'll take a little while to get rid of it.
Except, Your Honor, there is the concept in economics of buying the economy jumbo package and getting a break on the... In my cross-examination was, well, have you ever met...
He was going to use it for the next several months.
How much does the 63 grams cost? The bargain.
Oh, it was much cheaper. I think the testimony was you could have gotten 10 grams. If you bought it at the street.
What is 63 grams cost?
It was approximately...
What's your volume discount?
I took a look at the record. It was the magnitude. It was about $1,200, I believe, for...
So you can buy the 63 grams for $1,200?
No, I'd have to look at the record. I think it was $2,500 approximately.
$2,500 for the 63 grams. And was he presumably financed by the bank robbery proceeds?
Or his hip-hop music production company. He also got a judgment about a year prior for $18,000, which we were stipulated to, and he said he put into producing hip-hop records and had some success with that. So,
well, I don't want to hip-hop you, but you're running into your rebuttal time.
Let me use a little bit of it because I reserve quite a bit. The bottom line is, Your Honor, my cross-examination was, have you ever met Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones or David Crosby of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? And I didn't mean that entirely facetiously. These guys use ounces of cocaine in a city. And my point is, Rockford is in Hollywood, California, and it isn't even Chicago. It's one of those destitute cities in this state with one of the highest unemployment figures. And the experience of a senior narcotic officer in Rockford is going to be very limited. And I think the jury could have drawn a different conclusion from that. There is the concept, all the prior cases they cite,
which agency did he work for?
The Rockford Metro Narcotics Unit, it's the Rockford Police Department. And that's my point. And I would like to save some rebuttal time because I do anticipate.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Yesparo?
Thank you. May it please the Court, Michael Esparo on behalf of the United States. With respect to the defendant's prior conviction coming in under Rule 404B, specific intent was at issue here, particularly because the defense with regard to count 3 was that the defendant possessed this.
But if he wasn't allowed to have a possession and personal possession instruction, why shouldn't the conviction have gone out with it?
Well, at the time that we sought admission of the 404B evidence, we were anticipating a simple possession defense, and and we were required to prove the defendant's knowledge and intent. That's what the 404B evidence in the prior conviction went to.
Right.
With regard to the jury instruction for simple possession, that requires the defense to present some type of affirmative evidence suggesting...
But what you're saying is he had no personal possession defense. If he had no personal possession defense, then the jury, if it obeyed the instructions, couldn't acquit him on that.
Well, the fact that the defense was meritless did not prevent him from arguing it.
Well, I don't understand. But if he didn't have an instruction, how is he allowed to argue it?
He was allowed to argue it because a couple of the cross-examination of the defense expert, number one, where there was just...
But, I mean, he wasn't allowed in his closing argument, was he, to say he had just bought this for his personal use?
The inference was there during the closing argument, Judge, both based upon the cross-examination of the expert and also based upon the fact that the defendant was found with a small amount of marijuana in his pocket at the time of his arrest. The inference was made during closing argument that because there was a small amount of marijuana, that this larger amount of cocaine must also have been for personal use. So the fact that those two in combination...
Did you try the case?
Yes, sir.
So at least we're both talking from knowledge of what happened. And that argument was made to the jury?
Yes, it was. Aside from those two...
By the way, you responded on quantity, I assume.
That's right. As well as the expert's testimony that...
Which had to do with the quantity.
It did.
Well, what about his argument that he belongs to this, music elite, people who purchase and consume huge quantities of cocaine? That sounds like a good argument.
Well, it would only be a good argument were it not for the expert's testimony. The expert testified...
No, but what he said, Mr. Flynn said, was that poor people in Rockford, they can't... But if Keith Richards comes to Rockford for a concert, he's going to bring his 63 grams with him because the elite...
I think this ought to be looked at, by the way, just in an academic sense.
Right?
Based upon what the expert testified to, that the most amount he had ever seen a user possess was 3.5 grams, what's referred to as an 8-ball on the streets. That's approximately 6% of what this defendant possessed at the time. So to argue...
What's the value of what he had? Street value.
About $1,200 to $1,500 when you buy it in bulk quantity like that.
Well, that's not such a large amount, is it?
But the expert testified that were he to buy...
Is it like milk? Does it go sour if you don't drink? If you don't
inhale
it all at once?
I don't think so, but I'm not familiar with...
You are not expert on it.
No, I'm not.
Well, if he got this $18,000 settlement, why not take 10% of it and get a volume discount for his buy 63 grams?
They're not scholars in law and economics.
Judge, the fact of the matter is that there was not any affirmative evidence that would support the simple possession instruction, and that's what the law requires. The fact that there was one or two cross-examination questions of the expert and an inference that because of a small amount of marijuana that this very large amount of cocaine was for personal use is simply not enough to support the lesser included instruction.
How many doses is 63 grams? How many shots?
Well, I think the normal dose, both crack cocaine, if it's cooked into crack cocaine, and powder cocaine, is about a tenth or two-tenths of a gram.
So this could actually be several hundred snorts?
Yes.
Or less that number and snort a lot.
We
bury people like that every day, but anything further?
Unless this court has any further questions, we'd rest on our brief and ask the court to affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gasparo. Mr. Flynn, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Your Honor, the time I wanted to reserve was to rebut this inference that I have to put my defendant on the stand to say that he wanted to use it. The Fifth Circuit addressing that issue said that you could do that through cross-examination, and obviously...
You're right on that point.
And inferences can be drawn from that. Your Honor, in Rockford, Illinois, I purchased a home for $150,000. It would cost me $750,000 to $1 million here in Chicago, probably $500,000. It is economically very different. Their expert also said that he was aware that people who used in excess of the 3.5 grams. His experience is limited to a very small, impoverished town in Illinois. And my position simply is when you take these instructions as a whole, they confuse the jury that was deadlocked on a bank robbery charge, and in effect, I think, directed a verdict. This is a jury that struggled. They said they took 8 votes on the bank robbery. There was evidence that there's a Jamaican hair. The only positive ID was from a woman who other tellers said was nervous and looking away from him. She said she wasn't. She identified him by his lips. There were 4 other non-identities or identifications. There was a Jamaican dreadlock hat that had somebody else's hair in it. The gun they find in his house, their forensic expert said, was not the one used in the bank robbery. There was no other. All the forensic stuff exonerated my client. And I think, taken as a whole, and that's what the law says we have to do, this case should be remanded in its entirety for a new trial.
Thank you, Mr. Klan. You were appointed, were you not?
I was, Your Honor.
Well, the court thanks you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.
Okay.